Welcome to the Citizens for Health radio show on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts, Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Make sure you check us out by clicking on the Citizens for Health radio show link on buildingfortunesradio.com. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. Citizens for Health provides over 100,000 supporters with consumer news, action alerts, and opportunities to take action. For nearly two decades, Citizens for Health has been a nonprofit pioneer in the natural health freedom movement. The Citizens for Health Education Foundation offers tools to inform the public of health issues and educate and influence policymakers. Jim Turner is here to spread the word about some of the most interesting topics that can affect your world, from the dangers of mislabeled or dangerous products to the questions and concerns of vaccines. You'll want to listen to Jim as he speaks on behalf of Citizens for Health. And now, on to our show with Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Take it away, Peter.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You are listening to us live on Building Fortunes Radio. This is our super special Citizens for Health radio show. We do this every Friday at noon Eastern time if Jim Turner is available. So even when he's traveling, sometimes he gets a chance to jump on this radio show, and we try to bring up-to-date information for you on what's happening in the world of Jim Turner and Citizens for Health. They have a great website, citizens.org. That's CITIZENS.org. And if you go sign up for the newsletter, you're going to be kept informed on some of the action alerts that happen with Citizens for Health. I'll share with you. I think sometimes they also try to specify, if you will, the action alerts perhaps towards your specific area. So I know here in Florida where I am, I've seen some alerts pop up into my email through signing up through the newsletter that I would have never known. I would have just never known that it was happening in my own state. And that's been great information for me. And then also, you'll always be attuned of some of the things that are happening worldwide as well. So we've been running our radio show with Jim Turner, I think, since 2013. So it's been a really long time. And I thoroughly enjoy doing this radio show because he keeps us up to date on things. Now, of course, I know all about Citizens for Health because I host this radio show and we do it every Friday at noon, but some of you are brand new listeners and may not have ever heard of Jim Turner, or you may not have ever heard of Citizens for Health or citizens.org, and you got to sign up for the newsletter so you never forget. But Jim, could you give us a little thumbnail sketch of who you are and what Citizens is, and then we'll move into this week's topic?
Well, I arrived in Washington in 1968 and began working with Ralph Nader, and I got it signed, or we agreed, he and I, that I would do a Nader-type investigation of the Food and Drug Administration's food policies. And that ended up in a book called The Chemical Feast, The Nader Report on Food Protection at the FDA. I always enjoyed the fact that Time magazine called it the most devastating study of a federal agency ever written. We had 25 law and medical students were the team that did that, and it was very important, laid out a set of principles that have pretty much guided what I've been doing since that time. We formed our firm here in 1973. In the course of things, 1993, FDA tried to restrict dietary supplements. They'd been doing that all along. From even before I came to Washington, and there was a huge outcry from the public. Citizens for Health came into existence and was the consumer part of a huge coalition that generated about 1.5 million letters. This is before the Internet, so about 1.5 million letters to the FDA, and to Congress. And the result of that was that Congress passed the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act, that actually created kind of a bill of rights for dietary supplement users. We argued from the consumer point of view, and we said consumers have a right to these things. I had also been involved before that in helping to lobby for the Organic Food Production Act of, Organic Food Production Act of 1990 and the Nutrition Labeling and Education Act of 1990. These are all efforts to get the FDA to stop creating trouble for food consumers. I mean, it was just as the FDA has been, was then and is now, a very regressive force in supporting consumer choice for things that are available. Anyway, Citizens, since 93, has consistently gone after every effort of the FDA to minimize consumer choice. FDA tried to, FDA and USDA, it's the whole government, and the FTC, they tried to redefine organic to minimize consumer access to organic food. They tried to had some regulations in the late 90s, early 2000s to further restrict dietary supplements. In all of those instances, Citizens for Health generated between 250,000 and 300,000 email encounters with FDA, and the end result of all of that was those policies were not adopted ultimately. And that's what we do. And as you say, when you get a notice in your inbox about something that is, the government's trying to do to take something away, then it's probably useful to just jump in and respond, and we do get a heavy response. We have about 135,000 individuals' email addresses, and we figure probably 70,000 of those are unique individuals, and they respond pretty effectively. And we also join with many other groups to be involved in pushing FDA to and the FTC and agriculture to make sound policies in the food and health area. That's what we do, and our team that does it really likes hearing from the public and watching the public react and listening to people like you say they enjoy the information that comes through.
Excellent. Well, thanks. So, you know, I was grabbing my fingers as I was listening to you saying you started with Ralph Nader in 1968, and since this is 2018, it's kind of easy to do that. You've been doing this for a real long time. So we've been over 50 years at least in this industry, and it doesn't look like it doesn't look like it's ever over. It's always looking like it's a constant, never-ending battle. And if there's not good guys like you fighting for this stuff, some of the other sides are going to probably win. So we were talking a little bit about homeopathy and what's going on in that environment as well. And, you know, I don't know a lot about homeopathy, but there's nothing synthetic that I know about relative to homeopathy. I think they're all natural products, like nature natural products, like whatever that might be. I don't know anything, like there's no synthetic this, and there's no drugs this, and all that sort of stuff. And there's very few, there's very little of the active ingredient, if any, left. It's sometimes even the essence of it. And I don't hear about people dying from homeopathy. Matter of fact, I've never heard of anybody dying from homeopathy or anything else like that. And if it was probably attributed to something else, maybe, perhaps. But the reality is, what's going on with homeopathy and where are we today?
Well, homeopathy is a longstanding American and worldwide modality for health. In fact, it was probably as many as a third of the doctors in the United States in the 1900s were homeopaths. There were many, many different kinds of doctors in those days, and homeopathy might have been the largest. The guys that went around in buckboards and went house to house out on the farms, many, if not most of them, were homeopaths. And it's a very gentle treatment system organized by a German physician back in the late 1700s, early 1800s, named Hahnemann. And incidentally, just outside my office window here, not too far away, is a statue of Hahnemann that was dedicated by President McKinley and 100 of America's leading citizens in 1900. And he dedicated it to the founder of modern medicine. And the idea is these very, very, very small doses. I mean, they're minuscule doses are used by patients. And what he watched was how they affected people. And on the basis of that effect, created a huge body of knowledge, probably the most vigorous undertaking of empirical science that's ever been done. And many people use these products. And in fact, the senator who sponsored the Food and Drug Act of 1938 was a homeopath. He'd been the city health commissioner in New York during the 1918 flu epidemic, and he had quite good success with homeopathy for the people in New York and New York City. And as a result of his success, he went into politics and was elected senator and remained senator until about 1938. He died in 1938. The bill that was passed, the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act of 1938, has a very clear statement identifying homeopathy as an important source of treatment for people in this country. It's in the law. That's the main reason it probably exists today, because the FDA has been working to try to get rid of it and undermine it, and it's not been possible. back in 1988, when the homeopathy issue came to a little bit of a head, pretty much outside the public notice, the FDA was lobbied and cajoled and maneuvered into, and agreements were made that set up a guideline for homeopathic products. And that guideline has been operating since 1988, and it's been very good. People have been very happy with it. It's not been intrusive. And so, of course, the FDA, being the FDA, had to, in the last couple of years, say, well, let's say they're just like drugs. And there's not a single instance of anyone dying from or being seriously injured by a homeopathic product. There is one issue that needs to be attended to, and that is some companies are using the word homeopathic on products that are not homeopathic. On the basis of that possibility, the FDA is moving in to restructure the entire homeopathic world and say that homeopathic products need to meet the same standards as pharmacological drugs. Here, these pharmacological drugs are inherently unsafe, and the only way they get to become on the market is if they can demonstrate that they have benefits that outweigh the lack of safety. You know that from watching a TV ad for a drug. You know, they say, take this drug and help yourself, and then watch out, it could kill you. That's the managing of an inherently unsafe marketplace. Homeopathy is an inherently safe marketplace. The very, very few problems, and as I say, no deaths, very, very few problems, those have been traced directly to either mislabeling a product as homeopathic, which wasn't homeopathic, or preparing a product in a way that was said to be homeopathic, but wasn't homeopathic. Those are things that were addressed by the 1988 FDA guidelines, and now the FDA wants to tear it all up and push the homeopathic world directly into studies, doing the studies like the pharmaceutical companies do. By the way, one FDA, it was actually an FTC expert witness, said that to get one ingredient in one herbal product or any drug product, one ingredient through the FDA process would take $100 million. The whole homeopathic marketplace generates about $3 billion at the FDA estimate and about $1 billion at the industry's estimate. $100 million to get each of these products approved is just ridiculous. But that's what the FDA is trying to do. So this all came to a head December 24th or so, 23rd, a couple days, maybe it's 17th, I guess, a couple days before Christmas, the FDA announced we're going to tear up the homeopathic rules and start over. The homeopathic community, particularly led in part by mothers who use homeopathy with their children, started marching on the FDA, and I think we talked about it last week. Lo and behold, the FDA has extended the comment period from March 20th to May 21st, and now the public is getting more engaged, and it's very, very important that everybody take an interest in this, because they're going after homeopathy now, but they're also, and there are many other things they're going after now too, but they're trying to close down anything that offers an alternative to the consumer from the pharmaceutical industry. And when I say that, when I say they're trying to close it down, I'm not sure that they are intentionally saying, hey, let's close it down. What they are doing is creating a process that will have the effect of removing huge quantities of choice from the consumer's hands, because just to validate a homeopathic drug, it's not worth $100 million economically. It can't be done. I mean, it's not possible to do it. And they want to do that for all of them, basically. They're starting with the prescription drugs, but they want to go on to the prescription homeopathics, but they want to go on now to, they will go on to over-the-counters, and they'll go on to everything. They'll come up with all kinds of mechanisms to do it, but in the end, what they're saying is we want to restrict the ability of the consumer to make the choice for homeopathy. It is not justified to do that in the homeopathic world. So there's been progress in the sense that there's a new comment period, and there's going to be much more public discussion and meetings with the FDA and work to create basically the objective of the homeopathic community right now is to bring back the rules that were adopted in 1988, the ones that have been very effective for the last 30 years, and see if we can't have those continue on into the future.
Great update. We did a radio show on Building Fortunes Radio, the Citizens for Health radio show segment, with a gal that was part of the homeopathy community. So if you look for buildingfortunesradio.com/citizens, you'll be able to hear that radio show if you go search for it. Jim, I'm going to apologize in advance. I don't remember her first name. So, or her name.
Paula Brown.
There we
Paula
go.
Paula Brown, she's a mother in Texas, and very articulate, and has and carries with her a kit of 100 homeopathic remedies that she uses, very small little kit that she uses with her children and her family and so forth. And she's just been going along happily doing, living life and doing stuff. Her husband works in the oil industry, and they're moving along, having a good life and being very happy. And all of a sudden, as a Christmas present last year, the FDA says, bam, we're going to now disrupt your ability to treat your children with homeopathic remedies. And she just called all the other mothers that she knew that were using homeopathy, and they formed a group called Americans for Homeopathic Choice, and came to Washington and visited 100 congressional offices, and met with 15 of their – she had appointments in 15 of them before she met with them, and went to another 85 just walking in and handing out material and talking to people. Then came back to Washington to go to the first meeting of the Congressional Caucus on Integrative Health and Wellness. And basically, these mothers are very, very unhappy with having their ability to take care of their children disrupted. And there's a community coming together, and they're joining up with other health choice movements that the FDA is trying to curtail in one way or another. And there will be, I think, a developing presence of that. So Paula Brown, check out Americans for Homeopathic Choice, and their activities are growing and developing. There's a movie that's now been produced called Magic Pills about homeopathy, interestingly enough, by another mother, happens to be a filmmaker. But that's beginning to make the rounds, and people can get a license to show that movie for about $200, and they can show it and make money on it and move forward. And all of that can be very, very successful in terms of getting the word out about homeopathy and having people meet other people who are interested in health choice. It looks to me like it might be one of those movements that comes along that people aren't aware of until they suddenly are everywhere. The FDA, the government itself just provokes people constantly without paying any attention to what the effects of what they're doing. They just provoke outcries. And when that happens, almost always the institutions with money in the society, which are the major corporations, tend to dominate the regulators, and the regulation comes out and gives them what they want. And then, consumers end up holding the dirty end of the stick.
Excellent. And we're going to blow past our commercial this week because we're on such an interesting topic. You had mentioned one time before that the challenge to the pharmaceutical industry is that although homeopathy and the products related to it cost very little relative to what they do, they really have a big ding on the pharmaceutical industry. Do you want to kind of explain that?
Well, every dollar that goes into homeopathy seems to take something like $1,000 out of the pocket of the pharmaceutical industry. Homeopathic remedies are very, very inexpensive. And they're based on a set of theories that are quite different than pharmaceuticals. Pharmaceuticals on the notion of chemistry and how chemistry works. Homeopathy and many of the other natural healing modalities are based on energy, on the energy dynamic. And what's interesting to watch, and I first ran across homeopathy in 1970 when our team was doing the Chemical Feast, and this very American long-standing system of homeopathy. It actually came from Germany. It's very big in other places in the world. It's been in being. It's just been existing. It's going along. Lots of people use it. Lots of people find themselves being made healthy when Western drugs didn't work. Homeopathy works for them. It's just there. But in this period of time since 1970 until now, the ideas of physics and quantum physics and the notion of how energy affects things has gained more and more momentum, so that there are now dozens, if not hundreds, of studies, and even some by the Nobel Prize winner from France who discovered the cause of AIDS. These studies are showing that homeopathy has a possible way of working through its energy framework. That's out there. And, a bunch of the so-called skeptics and hardcore rationalist scientific folks argue that's all quackery. It would be good if they actually took a look at some of the actual studies, because they're quite interesting. The experience that people have been having about being made healthy by using homeopathy seems to be getting more and more scientific support as the years go on. And the FDA walks right into the middle of this and says, let's control that. And there's a suspicion that the fact that every time you spend a dollar on homeopathy, you take $1,000 out of the pharmaceutical industry, that there may be some pressure from the pharmaceutical industry to do something about that. I don't know for sure whether, I have no way of proving that, nor do I even allege it in general, but it is a system that is different from the system that is currently dominant. That is, homeopathy is a different system. The FDA is now trying to argue that it has to meet the same standards of the chemistry system. Those standards were generated, and as I said, a homeopath was the guy that generated the food and drug law. And the idea was that there are things out there that are inherently dangerous that can provide some very valuable help for people. Antibiotic drugs is an example. Antibiotic drugs are fantastic. They're powerful. They're significant. They're useful. And they should be used in moderation. They should be used in life-saving situations. And what we've done is we've turned them into something that people use every day, all the time, to address minor ailments. It turns out that homeopathy, which causes no harm, is very good for dealing with some of these daily ailments that aren't all that big a deal, flu and colds, for example. They aren't that big a deal, and people can be made quite comfortable using homeopathy rather than the chemical drugs. The chemical drugs are inherently dangerous. They need to be used with great care, and they need to have their benefits demonstrated so that the harm they cause can be justified by the fact that they cause something better. That's true when you're in an extreme situation and an antibiotic can keep you alive. That's what you want it for. When you are using the antibiotics to handle some kind of relatively minor infection, you undermine its ability to work for the crisis situation when it arrives. And people know that quite well in science and in medicine. And in fact, they will try to work hard to keep you from swallowing a bunch of chemical pills. However, the marketplace drives the use of these chemicals. That's what the TV ads are all about. Get people to use these chemicals. That's very, very important. Homeopathy is not a chemical. The FDA wants to now force it into being treated as if it were a chemical, which it's not, and try to create prohibitive costs on getting the access to these things that are safe and actually work. So folks should, perk up and start getting interested in this homeopathy movement, and go out and spend a dollar on homeopathy and take $1,000 away from the pharmaceutical industry.
There you go. Now, there was we're going to run out of time, so it's hard to introduce a new topic. But there's a lot of things going on right now in the news relative to, I guess, data breaches or data security, sharing information and things like that. And, Facebook's in hot water. for the stuff that happened with, you know, everything's wrong, everything's presidential election related and Donald Trump and the Russia. So we, you know, got to make sure that we tie everything into Russia because Donald Trump couldn't possibly have been elected president, you know, the right way. That's my little political thing in there. But the reality is that Facebook is being, you know, shown to be really loose on their policies related to personal data and privacy related issues. So the thing that's what people are talking about. There's a lot of stuff that people aren't talking about, and I'll use as an example something that I just read a little bit recently about genetic testing. One of the newest things that I think the FDA has made available for people is that now you can do genetic testing, like an individual can find out more about what's going on with your own genes. Just like with Ancestry.com, you can go and find out a little bit more about, you know, like who you were and find out where your genealogy might have been as far as your quote-unquote race. But these are opening up big, huge issues related to what do they do with that data when they find it. They might send it back to you and says, here's your genetic markers or here's your genetic makeup. But they're also sharing that data with everybody that wants to know about it. So do you want to comment on that at all?
Well, it's a very serious problem. In fact, there is an act of Congress that texts the mental health of individuals that is learned by your doctor, because a member of Congress's medical file was released, and they took out of the file information on her mental health and put it on a billboard in her district. Said she had a mental breakdown at some point. That she was reelected anyway, and then the result of all of that was a change in the law on the mental health issues. Now, the problem with the genetic issues is if they get in the wrong hands, they can be affect your life very profoundly. For example, you might now there's a whole fight over pre-existing conditions or even whether you can get insurance or not. But right now, an insurance company can deny you insurance for certain health conditions. They can just say, we're not going to give you insurance for that. Now, there's, as I say, there are legal fights about all of that. And so if now we, Citizens for Health, went to court and tried to stop the Privacy Act that was going through because it was sold as a Privacy Act, it's the privacy for the Internet for healthcare. But what it did was it used to be that only you and your doctor had access to your medical records. The law that went through said about 1.5 million additional people, that is anybody that provides services to a medical office, can now get access to your records. And then if it goes beyond that, they can go the only enforcement mechanism for keeping your medical records from getting in the hands of, say, an insurance company is that write a letter to the secretary, and then if he finds that there is a problem and they have violated the law, he is authorized to write them a letter and tell them to stop. That is the extent of the way the law protecting privacy is currently structured. Now, with the genetic findings that are going on, FDA stopped one of the companies, 23andMe, from doing health information in their genetic information. They couldn't advertise it. They couldn't promote it. They couldn't really make it available, essentially. However, all you need to do is make the genetic information available, and then people can go on the Internet and find out how it affects their health. I mean, there is a huge flow of information now about the genetic identity of individuals. That genetic identity information is not any more controllable than the Facebook information is. The tricky problem is there's no way you can control these. I mean, we can go ahead and pass acts of Congress and do all kinds of stuff to give people rights and all that, and then they can go out and try to enforce those rights. But in the final analysis, what you put on the Internet is going to be found by somebody that you didn't intend it to be found by. And so you should be very, very careful about what it is that you put there. When you do a genetic testing activity, they say it's private, but there's no way to guarantee that that's private. It could easily get out of control. The technology folks are working hard to come up with stuff that can be impenetrable. That's what blockchain is working on, and there are all kinds of blockchains out there working hard to create an individual identity that's not hackable. And there's going to be this constant fight going on in the Internet world, in the information world, But you have to control your own information, be very, very careful what it is that you allow to go into the internet world or going into the electronic world. And that, in my view, includes thinking very, very carefully about the genetic information that you allow to get out of your control.
Perfect. And I know we're going to run out of time for those people listening in online. You might be dropped off, but those people are still listening on the phone. You'll still be able to hear this. And those people that listen to the replays will be able to hear the whole entire thing. There's just one other thing I want to add to it, Jim, and the things that you're referencing over here. And that's like, well, what's the real, you know, what does this mean to me? Some people ask that question. So what does this really mean to me? Well, if you've ever done anything like an online application, you know, for, let's just use car insurance or health insurance or a rate for something where you're buying something, you know, somebody put that little formula, or you might use the term algorithm, together, and you have no clue. Like, for instance, I was just on Amazon just recently. So I went to Amazon to buy something, and when I went to Amazon to buy something, they asked me if I wanted to buy the Amazon card, and they'll give me an answer instantly. So you say, well, what are all the variables that determine that, and how can you determine that within, you know, the 3 or 5 or 30 seconds that they're going to be able to spit out an answer? And the answer is the same thing happens with health insurance or car insurance or employment or maybe even, you know, the apartment that you rent, or somebody who's putting together the employment, if you will, algorithm to try to do some prejudgment of some applicants for a job. Because, Jim, I'm sure that there's some lawyers, attorneys, whatever, people that are crimping numbers or crunching numbers when they're putting together these things, when they're taking a look at applicants, they would want to know if you have a predisposition towards problems with pregnancy or problems with cancer, or if you have a really bad medical stuff in your family lineage. I would want to know that if I was an employer, if I had a choice of employing X person without these things or Y person with those things, those might be determinations. And you'll never see where that information is coming up, calculated into that algorithm or that kind of formula that'll be working against you. And that's the insidious and the very dangerous part, in my opinion. So back to you.
Well, the problem with many of these emerging technologies is they are double-edged. They have a very positive thing to do, and they have a very dangerous side to them. When we did the Chemical Feast book, one of the things that we turned up, and actually from a very high-ranking government official who told us about it, is that there are studies that show a genetic propensity to be violent. You go and you look, and there's a gene makeup that says these people can be violent. And so what happened is that a couple of scientists got together and said, let's start restricting these people because we know they're going to be violent. Let's make rules about that. And anytime we find this gene set up, we'll say, let's restrict these people. Let's watch them. Let's sit on them. Let's not give them the rights that everybody else has. It was actually going on. And that was the stop was put to that, and they were not stopped. The reason was that the same genetic profile also identified some of the most creative people. The issue was, how do you take this propensity to be outside the box that leads some people to act violently but leads other people to act creatively? How do you manage that in society? Well, you can't make a rule that says everybody who is in this gene profile, both the violent ones and the creative ones, will be restricted in their ability to express themselves. That's the whole point of the American system, is that everybody has the opportunity to express themselves. What we want to do is create a system so that when people are acting outside the box, we get their benefit. We get the positives from them. We don't want to pin them in and pin them down and undermine them and make them, force them into being antisocial actor-outers. So that was pinned down. That was stopped then back in 1970. However, it's come back quite strongly now, particularly in the gun control area. You know, this is a huge, huge debate. And someday maybe we can talk about that, but that's another one going on here in Washington at this point. But you cannot profile individuals and say these ones are likely to be bad, therefore we have to take away their rights. That's a prior restraint. It's a complete violation of our Constitution. It undermines the whole notion that individuals have rights and that when those rights are collectively expressed, we get a better society. And we accept certain kinds of dangers from that, and we try to manage those dangers. But again, you can you could profile people, and it'd be very valuable. And you can profile the same people, and you can come up with something with that's very negative.
There we go. Perfect. So great. We are going to call this a radio show. Jim, thanks for being here.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, this is really important information. So make sure you check it out. Go to citizens.org. Sign up for the newsletter. Go to citizens.org. Of course, look around the site. Get actively involved, because all this stuff means something to you and your loved ones for sure. And like I said a little bit earlier, when Jim said he started with Ralph Nader, 1968, it's been doing this for over 50 years, and it doesn't look like there's any slowing down. If you're not actively involved.
Slowing down in the fight, but I will tell you that the center of gravity of the fight has been going more and more for individual rights, individual capacity. The average individual today has got a much more reach and ability to express themselves and be involved in creating their own lives than they did in 1970. And in 1970, they had a lot more than they did in 1930. It's moving along, and people are getting a better reach and a better ability to express themselves and gather positives from the society around them. And all the noise that we see politically and economically and so forth is like the sparks that come off the space flight when it's coming back to Earth. You know, it makes its way through, and the sparks go, and everybody sees them and so on. But it does land, and the astronaut usually gets out.
Excellent. Okay, good. So we're going to catch everybody next week. Thanks for being here. Check it out, buildingfortunesradio.com /citizens, and we'll see you next time. Thanks, Jim.
Thanks a lot, Peter. Next week.
Welcome.
Bye.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Citizens for Health radio show, brought to you by Citizens for Health on buildingfortunesradio.com with Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Thanks for listening. For nearly two decades, Citizens for Health has been a nonprofit pioneer in the natural health freedom movement. Go to www.citizens.org to learn more, and always listen in to Building Fortunes Radio, where our special host, Jim Turner, shares crucial information about many of the most important issues that affect your world. Citizens for Health provides over 100,000 supporters with consumer news, action alerts, and opportunities to take action. So listen in, get involved, and help spread the word. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website to hear more Citizens for Health segments with Jim Turner and Peter Mingle, and read about what's new on www.citizens.org. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. Jim Turner, Peter, and I want to say thanks for listening and ask you to go spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.